I'm Steve McLeod, and you are listening to The Community Lounge, the podcast where community managers from the video games industry tell their story, talk about the challenges they face, and share tips to help other community managers do their job better.
Today, I'm joined by Eric Jacobson. Eric is currently a community manager at Paradox Interactive in Sweden, where he manages a team of ambassadors. Notably, Eric got into the industry by having his Discord server acquired by a game. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Hello there, thank you for having me on.
Why don't we start with the Discord server and how that happened? Because that's actually a really fascinating story. Tell us about that.
It's an old story. Back in the day, I was playing Grand Strategy games for fun, and my friend introduced me to an upcoming game called Heart of Iron 4, which is developed and published by Paradox Interactive. I thought it was really fun, but also it had multiplayer in it, so I started a fun little Discord server with some friends and started playing multiplayer every Friday, and we thought, why not invite some more people? And long story short, that server grew to about 30,000 people, and back in 21, I was approached by Paradox Interactive's then community manager, Benjamin Magnus, about acquiring the Discord, as they wanted to expand upon the platform, and acquiring my Discord, which was the largest one for the game, seemed easier than starting from scratch. And from that, they offered me a freelance position to manage that Discord and also their forums and Steam channels, and that's kind of how I got into it as a start.
So the thing that you were doing for free as a passion, as a hobby, actually became your job, your paid job.
Yeah, it did. It was not something I was expecting. I was studying completely different things, but I kind of just started to love it.
And did they pay money to acquire the Discord, or was the payment the offer of a freelance position?
The payment was the offer of a freelance position.
It's amazing. So many people in our industry, you know, create their own communities and Discord servers, whatever you want to do. And or even like just a fan page, you know, some type of web page, and to have the company come along and say, actually, you've done what we want to do. Can we have it? It's a really nice story.
Yeah, it's a level of appreciation you didn't expect. You know, one when you just made a fun little Discord or fandom or community, that the company that makes the game would approach you and say, we really like this. We want you to work for us.
Now, fun little Discord, 30,000 people. That's not a fun little Discord. So like, how was it? How were you managing to manage that Discord when you were doing it for free? Was it like consuming a lot of your time and energy?
Well, as a start, you know, we started as a group of a few hundred people, and that kind of grew over time, especially since we put a link on Steam on the discussion page for the game. And it was just continuously playing games every Friday. We had a little game hosting, and one turned to two turned to three turned to four. And then over time, you found the volunteers who wanted to help moderate the server. You tried to make it a bit more professional, less, you know, fun. You tried to make everyone feel more welcome in it. But yeah, when it turns around 30,000 people, it starts consuming a bit of time. So I was probably spending a few good hours on it every week while I was studying on the side.
So you said you had some volunteers. How did you find those volunteers? And did they stick around for a long time?
Yeah, it was mostly a start. People volunteered, they just wanted to help out. You know, they really enjoyed the server. They spent a lot of their time there playing games or meeting new friends. And then kind of drew a little small team of people, of moderators. Then we started having moderators and admins, as there was a lot of moderators and, you know, different tasks to do. And later on, we, you know, actually just put out like, hi, do you want to be a moderator? Apply here, because it became so many people. And yeah, some stuck around, some left, you know, in and out. And actually, still to this day in the Discord, we still have volunteer moderators. And I know there's one of them who's been there since almost the start. And he's still as active on the Discord playing games every week, which is something else.
Wow, wow. And how did your relationship to the Discord server change when it became a paid role for you?
I think it's at the start, it stayed the same. Over time, you know, it became more of a job, and you try to separate, you know, working between your personal life, as work-life balance is very important. So I think over time, it became, you know, less of a hobby. I really enjoyed doing this, more, this is my job, I do it, you know, I try to explore, you know, grow it in different ways, as Now, before, it was more about, I want to draw the therapist's son. A little like, how do we maximize reach and draw for an engagement?
Uh-huh. You've got to start putting all those, I'm not going to say corporate words, but like professional words into the same thing. That's interesting. Hey, you said you had a form for people applying to be moderators. So what type of criteria did you use when you were doing this as a hobby, not as a job? What kind of criteria were you looking for people wanting to help moderate?
I think it was a few things like, where in the world are you based? Do you speak English, as that was the main language of the server? There were a few questions I wrote that was mostly to see if they can work well in a team and how are they with people. As a moderator, you have to deal with a lot of different situations. And mostly asked very much open-ended questions to see kind of what personality they had. And then from the application, if it looked fine and not out of the ordinary, I would just sit down and have a chat with them. To get to know them a little bit, see how they are, and then you put them on a trial period, let's see how you can help out.
So you said that you wanted to know where in the world they were. What was the reason for that?
As the server grew larger, we started getting, more people than just Europeans. We started getting people from North America, South America, Asia, Australia. And given that, I'm from Europe in Sweden and majority of the staff was from Europe or North America, we needed to get people to actually be available when we weren't on. So, if you were from Australia or New Zealand, that would be a big plus because we did not have a lot of people around that time.
Got it. You mentioned that as the Discord grew, there were a lot of problems that had to be dealt with by the moderators. What are some of the problems you end up having to deal with people problems with a Discord server that big?
I think with any community that grows larger, you start having, people can have conflicts with each other. Conversations get heated. And how to best handle it not becoming a hostile environment for people to come into. Like if you join a Discord, you shouldn't, be greeted by people fighting each other in every text channel, or if you're on a voice channel, you should be, greeted by happiness instead of get out of here. You should try to be a welcoming place. And I think you need moderators to try to push towards that. It's not overly about, you should not say these exact words, more like you should be friendly and nice to new people. You're there to play games, have fun.
That's really interesting, and having to deal with those type of people problems, was it draining? Did it sometimes make you want to stop doing it?
I think at a certain point, there were all the crossroads where you're considering, is this all worth it in the end? Like, do I really enjoy doing this as I spend so much time? And there were definitely times where I was thinking, should I give this server to someone else? Should I leave it? But I think in the end, what kind of overwhelmed me wanting to continue is that I really enjoy building communities, because every time you figure out, this is not much fun doing this, it's a lot of effort. But then you hear people saying, I met, my friend of 3 years now on this Discord and we met up and had a lot of fun. And I think that kind of inspires you to keep on and building your community, because you see other people having such an amazing time there.
See, the reason why I wanted to really push into this about what it was like to run it is, I want to make sure that people listening to this don't think, I can start a Discord server for my favorite game, and a week later, the game's going to come along and employ me. It shows that it's hard work, right? It was hard work.
Yeah, no, definitely. It takes a long time. Like that Discord was started in 2016, and 2021, I started talking with Paradox, and then February 22 is when I got employed as a freelancer. So a lot of years, and going from, I think the first year we got up to 700 members, and that was a lot back in 2016. And then we started getting a few thousand a year, and I was like, that's a lot more people. So I think it's an element of a hard work, a luck, because it's the same thing. If you start a YouTube channel, you can be really good at something, you might not succeed. So it's just, you can try your hardest, and I think you should if you really want to make a Discord server or community, but you need to be patient, as patience is what wins.
Patience, plus also, there's more than patience there. There's also knowing that it's going to take a lot of energy from time to time. Yeah, and persistence. And now you're still as a freelancer, or you're a permanent employee now?
So about 6 months after I started as a freelancer, the then community manager left the position, and I applied for it, and I became the community manager as an employee at Paradox. So I've been an employee for about almost 3 years now at headquarters here in Sweden.
Well, so there's the first question I usually ask in interviews is your path into becoming a community manager. And I think you've described that. Have we missed any important detail?
I think just one thing is that, you know, work experience is very important. You know, I got lucky getting in the way I did. But even though I've been working, you know, all the time, I've also been studying about 20 hours a week throughout all the years I've been working for almost 4 years. Because, you know, theoretical knowledge will help you a lot, but practical knowledge is invaluable.
Okay. What were you studying?
I was studying different ways how to do social media marketing, project management, leading teams, and also the philosophy behind the community and creating online communities.
Where did you find that information?
I found some books by talking to colleagues or some people online in different industry servers, and then on different courses such as product management, it's mostly going online, seeing what has, you know, the best ratings, what helped the most people, and then try it out. There are a lot of really good free ones you can take, but I think there's a difference between, you know, free and paid. You know, you get what you pay for, so to speak.
Or what you don't pay for.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, currently I'm taking one product management course at Google, which is very valuable and I think a lot better than most of the free ones. But you can still get a good basic understanding from any of the free things on there. And there's YouTube videos, people holding panels, there's podcasts like this one where you can learn more about community.
Great. And what about events? Do you go to events, any events that you find helpful for community managers?
Yeah, I think there's some you can go to. In Stockholm, there's one called LinkedIn Bar. I've been to a few times, which is not just community managers, it's industry professionals, but it helps you see more into the game industry and it helps you a lot. But just events for only community managers, not that many I've been to before. I would recommend you try to find industry-related discords with community people because everyone is so helpful. You know, if you ask a question there, you will have 10 answers within the hour. We're like, we've had the same issue before.
So the only problem I can see with these discords for community managers is they are private. They have to be private. I think you're familiar with Gabrielle, whose surname I forget, Trance, who runs one. And we just talked about how it's kind of, as a community manager, as the face of the game, it's mostly good, but sometimes it isn't. And you just need that safe place where it's just for professionals in the industry.
Yeah, no, I think there are some smaller ones, like the one Gabriel runs. There are some much larger ones, which is easier to access, which you can find online and you can apply to join. I know there's one that has a very long name, but it has a few thousand members. I know you can apply, you can say you're a student, you're interested in learning. And of course, it's a different element of how they work. The large ones are more professional, you know, they're not really like people, you won't see people venting about their work in there, but you will still see people, you know, helping each other out, sharing jobs, maybe going to events together, meeting up. And I think, honestly, try to find as much as knowledge as you can and just kind of be a sponge and absorb it.
So last year I went to several events in the video games industry, and what I noticed is there's a real lack of community management streams in those events. Usually there's one or two like round tables or a talk, but generally it's almost missing from the general wider world of events. Have you found that too or something?
Yeah, no, I agree. It's not a large topic in larger industry events. Like I haven't been to GDC personally, but from people I know have been there, there's barely anything to none. And I think, you know, community management has evolved a lot in the past 5 years, 10 years, 20. It's completely different from what it was, you know, 2 years ago to what it is now. And it's such a flexible job and evolving one. I mean, still a larger corporations, they don't quite know what community management is at core. And you see that if you jump, you know, between, for example, Microsoft to Paradox to Blizzard, everyone works differently. Which is why, you know, it's not the same job everywhere. It's the same core principles of what you want to do. You want to grow a safe community place. You want to engage with your players, keep them happy. Because in the long run, you know, happy players, engaged players, they buy your products. And that's kind of the business reason why community exists. But how to get to that goal, how you do that is different everywhere. So I think it's not, you know, programming is of course different at different places, but it's the core of it is still easier to understand. You know, you program something, it's easier to understand the core of it than trying to explain community to someone who's never heard of community. I do hope, you know, we see a growing interest in community and more, you know, people taking an interest in, so we can see events, you know, at GDC or other industry events, that I think you should be really helpful for people who work in industry and also those who want to get into it.
Good answer. Moving on, I wanted to ask you about these ambassadors you told me that you manage. These are, you told me off air that these are paid roles. Tell me about what they do and how you find them.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, as a community manager here at Paradox, I do a lot of strategy, business planning, and, you know, the bigger picture things. They're working a lot with the development team or marketing department.
Just to interject briefly, are you working just on one game or you're working across multiple games?
Currently, I'm working on one project, one brand technically. But previously, I have worked up to three games at the same time. So when working on a lot of projects, even one, the amount of things you actually want to do across community, social media, and that includes, you know, all YouTube videos, all shorts, all Twitter posts, everything, it's a lot of work. So we hire community ambassadors as sort of, you know, the fingers of the community manager to help you execute your plans, you know, help you do video editing, help manage the Discords, what I did previously. So it's, you know, they work 20 hours a week as one person, so it's a half-time freelance position. For example, I have one in China that helps me localize all our developer diaries to Chinese, you know, keep all the players there, you know, keep talking to us, because without someone actually speaking to them, they kind of feel left out. And I think, just an example, Chinese reviews, especially on our games, but also a lot of games, are much higher in the negative area because no one actually talks to them. And when you can see a clear distinction when you have someone talking to them and when you don't, it's like, the reviews are starting to go up quite nicely.
That's amazing. I think right there, you've given studios and publishers a really good argument as to why they should have a community manager, if only to blunt the criticism so that people can kind of understand why things are the way they are, and or so they can feel listened to. If it gets better reviews, isn't everybody like obsessed with their Steam aggregate review rating?
Yeah, I think Steam reviews are kind of like a paradox in themselves. You see them, you don't quite know how to increase them or decrease them. Like, you know, of course, if you make a bad product, they'll be lower. If you make a good one, it'll be higher. But, you know, there's other things that go into it. You see people are complaining about there's too high prices. You don't localize my language. You can't, you know, you don't respond to my bug report or feedback. And that just gets inflated by, what if our bug report area is only in English and we have 500,000 Chinese players? That's not that's not the best success there. So, you know, trying to reach out to a growing market is a good idea. Especially, you know, I mean, I keep mentioning China because that's such a large growing market right now. Chinese gaming in the last 10 years has grown a lot. Like, especially for us, you know, Hearts of Iron, which is a game I worked on for quite some time, it went from being a growing market to our largest fan base in just a few years. And I think not enough companies have really realized how big of a market China is. You know, it's an enormous country with a lot of people, but how many more players join, you know, the worldwide PC market every year? And I think not talking to them is something that will over time lead to not directly failure, but not, you know, you could find success talking to them while you just would not find that well.
Hey listeners, a short interruption. When I'm not hosting the Community Lounge, I run Feature Upvote, a platform for managing player feedback. When you use Feature Upvote, your players can submit and upvote suggestions to improve your game in a single place. This gives you the data you need to develop a game that meets player expectations. And you can say goodbye to the confusion of trying to keep up with feedback scattered across discussions on Discord and Steam and Reddit. Learn more at featureupvote.com. So my product, Feature Upvote, we have a couple of customers in China, or at least we did. I can't remember if they're still active. And I'm actually quite intimidated by it all. I'm intimidated when we get that our when people are using a Chinese translation and I look at it and I don't have any idea what's on there, I have to say, and I guess, yeah, that's a really good argument for having someone on team who's fluent in Chinese and can translate.
Yeah, no, really. I haven't tried Feature Up my personal before, so I've looked into a little bit, but we've tried a few tools here. And the main issue is that, you know, majority of social media tools are made in the Western side of the world. The way they handle, well, most of them, the way they handle feedback or sentiment analysis of Asian countries is that they do AI translation. That is only good up until a point. And when your game is so, you know, detailed, where you have analogies or terminologies that an AI can't understand, you can lose the entire meaning of a message. Also, you know, especially on Chinese platforms, they have a high level of censorship on some platforms, so they use other words to, you know, we can't use this word, so we'll use this one. AI has no idea what they're talking about. Like, for example, on Bilibili, you can see Chinese players saying the word fudge a lot. That's because they can't say the other word, so they say fudge a lot. So trying to, you know, teach an AI to understand that is very hard. So you have hiring someone to, you know, really be there, talk to them, collect your feedback is a lot cheaper than using other localization tools that I've found thus far. And I think even if you could find a tool that is, you know, completely cheap or even free that could do the job, the personal connection you can't replace with a tool. So I think
personal connection having, you can't replace. I like that.
So having, you know, someone working there, I think it's prior. If you can have a tool to assist that, that's just, you know, extra nice.
Mm-hmm. Great stuff. And this this Chinese ambassador, or the three ambassadors in general, were you involved hands-on in finding and recruiting them?
Yeah, so I handle all the community ambassador recruitment for the brands I work on. I think since I started at Paradox, I've hired like 8 people across our different brands. You know, most of the time, if like regular recruitment, you will see an ad on Jobs Paradox, you can apply for it. It's all the information there. We'll have, you know, screening calls. I'll send you a work test. Sometimes I have contacted people saying, you should apply for this. I think you would be perfect for this, which is also how we found a Chinese ambassador, because he was very active on our forums and learned to sign a community member. So I think, you know, a few times a year, you'll find community ambassador positions open up at Paradox.
Okay. And then what's your role like managing them from day to day?
So on day-to-day, I need them to be relatively autonomous. I won't, you know, tell them exactly what to do. I will create a strategy and plan that I want them to be on board of. You know, they will get to be part of it all, you know, creating it. I'll give them the feedback that everyone feels they have ownership of the strategy. And then we have a sync meeting once or twice per brand. Like on the one I'm currently on, we have one on Mondays because we feel that's enough. On Heart of Iron, I previously had 2. On the sync meeting, we kind of ask you over the week's agenda. What are we doing on social media channels this week? Are we doing a short on Tuesday? What is that about? And then we talked a little bit about other things coming later on. How are we going to plan for that? Do we have any DLC releases, any larger videos we're doing? So it's more just trying to keep communication up, but then everyone has their assigned brands that they work on, so they handle the communication on that brand. So if we're doing a YouTube short, I'll have one person doing that. If we're doing communication on Twitter, I'll have someone else. And that also includes answering comments on those platforms as well, and, you know, collecting analytics for those in our reports.
Have you seen any of the ambassadors that you've managed over your time as community manager at Paradox? Have you seen any of them get promoted out of that, or end up find themselves in a full-time position or a higher position?
Yes, I am very happy with my percentage score on this. Myself, I was a community ambassador, but also 3 people I have hired as CAs have either gone up to community manager at our company or worked in marketing in a different one. And I think working as a CA, it's not the, you know, guarantee that, you know, you'll go up in rank, but you get to learn a lot because you work so closely with the marketing and business department and the developers. So you can, if you want to, you can learn a lot from other people and, you know, make that step going into community manager. I mean, it especially helps also because, you know, you're a freelancer, but you're, you know, you're not an employee, but you talk to everyone. You sometimes sometimes fly out to the office, you meet people, and connections help a lot when trying to get a job. If you see an application with someone, I'm like, oh, I know this person. Oh, I've worked with this person. It makes it that much easier.
Oh, the part of recruitment is you know, trying to guess whether this stranger who looks good on paper, what they're going to be like to work with, whether they're just going to be pleasant when there's a problem. And to have already proven that is a real advantage. Yeah,
absolutely.
It does sound like it can be very hard to get into certain community manager roles. Like, there is a long process. For you, it was running your own Discord server, then being a freelance ambassador, and now being a community manager.
Yeah, the process can be different for everyone. You know, I've seen some people move from completely different departments and the disciplines into community management by just kind of learning from then community management and going to more junior seniority. I've talked to people who have studied it, like, you know, a bachelor's degree, you know, in the communications and gone on for that way. Some people who work completely with social media expand their own community. So, you know, there's different, everyone does it differently on how to get into community. So I think, you know, there's not one right way in how to get into community, but if you want to, there is a way.
Yeah, good. So I have a question for tips. Let's assume I'm a young, enthusiastic player of games and I want to get into a community manager. No, I've just started my first role as a community manager. Mm-hmm. What tips would you have for me for my first weeks or months on the job? How should I get started in my brand new role as a community manager?
Talk to everyone you work with. Understand what their job is and how they work. Something I did when I started was I booked the meeting with every single person I thought I would be interacting with as a community manager and learned what do they do in their job? How do we interact between our jobs and how can we work together? Because, you know, you're not a lone wolf in a company. You're working with a lot of other people. Even though they have nothing to do with community, you will interact with them in some way or shape. So, I mean, learning that and how to work with your colleagues is invaluable and will help you so much. Because even though, you know, you might talk to someone who works in ads on paid media team, they might have understanding of a social media platform that you don't. And, well, as a community, you might work for social media, so that might be helpful. If you have a good relationship with the development team of the game you work on, that will help a lot, you know, getting their buy-in on doing dev diaries or videos. And overall, it's the same in every industry, in my opinion, but just good communication and having good working relationship with your colleagues helps everywhere.
I think that sounds like a very Swedish approach. I say that full on compliment, a real compliment. I like this idea that you do have to, you are working with everybody in your team. It's not just you have your role, but
I will say, you know, I've only worked for Swedish companies before, so it's definitely a different approach. I'm not sure how well it would do in, I know United States of America can be a bit more corporate level, so like, I don't know how many people in working in US countries have sat down for lunch with their CEO and just talked about games.
Have you had that chance at Paradox?
I have, yeah. You know, actually, we have something called onboarding day. You have to really make people do it, where you actually have lunch with all C-level people as like a group. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, there's a lot of opportunity. If you just want to, we use Slack as our communication tool. If you want to contact our CEO and just say something, you know, talk about something, he will respond to you and just, hi, fun. So I think, you know, that openness helps a lot. It's also something I noticed for people coming outside of Sweden to Paradox. It can be a bit, you know, a hurdle to get over to, you know, I can talk to my managers and their managers and it's fine. And of course, that's a cultural norm here in Sweden where, you know, it's more open everywhere. But I think, you know, outside of Sweden, you know, tips on community management, mostly of, you don't maybe not have to talk to anyone, but try to understand what other people do. You know, try to understand their jobs, their end goals. Because, you know, you might be able to have, you have your goal, they have their goal. How can you reach one goal together? You know, you can combine things, compromise.
Nice. Is that for tips? You have any other tips you'd like to add for first-time community managers?
Don't stop learning as the market keeps growing. I think this is a personal approach for me, but I feel if you decide that I can't learn anything, I am completely done learning, you might want to try to find something to, you know, light that fire under you again. You know, maybe find a new passion, a new game to work on, or like a new job maybe. Because I think that's honestly most jobs. But if you feel it can't learn anymore, then you might be burnt out or just have no passion anymore. So I think keep on learning forever. Learn from others, no matter how senior they are. Like, you can be someone who worked for two weeks, or it can be someone who worked for 10 years, listen to everyone because everyone can have good ideas.
Nice, nice. Is that it for tips?
Yeah, I would say so.
I have a feeling if I actually sat down over lunch with you, like you do with your CEO and other team members, I have a feeling I would also learn a lot one-on-one that in that conversation. I've been learning a lot in this phone call, actually, in this this video call.
I think, you know, there's no end to how much you can talk about certain things. So I think, you know, there's only so much you can learn in a short amount of time.
Great. One last question, no, second last question. How do you cope with the bad aspects of community management when you get that very tiny subset of players who are very vocal in a hostile way about something? How do you deal with that?
I think it's a two-pronged approach to that one. I think, you know, with any job, you can have a stressful moment. It can be, you know, community, it can be bad players, it can be things internally that can make you, you know, really want to rip your hair off, or it can be most things. And how you deal with that is, you know, you can try to, you know, let it go past you, but it's only just a point. You know, not everyone has as thick of a skin where nothing can pierce it. So try to find ways to, you know, let loose of potential stress. Like personally, I go to the gym 5 times a week to try and, like, you know, it's nice. You have an hour, you do nothing, you have to, you know, just relax. But I think for games and players being vocal, you have to understand one thing. They don't hate you. They don't hate the game. They're too passionate about the game and they might not be able to formulate what they're saying. They don't mean to be like evil or like mean. Well, some do, but most of them, they mean well. They just have a hard time formulating their thoughts and what they want to say. They just want the best for, you know, they want what's best for the game. And you need to try to see past the toxic part of what you're saying. Of course, to a point, you can't just straight up take insults to you or the dev team. But understand what they mean comes from a good place and try to listen to them. Take in their feedback, you know, really talk to them. Because I think most of the times where we've had people, I've heard, you know, this person can't work if they don't give any constructive feedback. No one has really sat down and talked to them. Like, they don't feel like you listen. And if you, you know, if they don't feel like you listen, they might lash out.
Right, yeah. It's really hard from both sides. I think some players, it takes them a while to learn that there's the right way to go about this. But also, yeah, we all want to feel listened to.
Yeah.
So real final question now. What game have you been playing lately?
That is a very good question. Lately, Path of Exile 2, when it came out, which I still feel is recent, I put a good maybe 150 hours in that game in like 2 weeks, which is, that was my vacation. But I don't know, I've been playing a game called Supervive. It's an indie game on Steam that is kind of a mix between Fortnite and League of Legends in 10 to 15 minutes, like short matches. And, you know, just getting home after work, like just want to play something quick, it's perfect. You can play something, you can kill people, you can loot really fast, you restart.
I like that criteria. Okay, I think on that note, we'll wrap up the conversation. So, Eric, thanks again for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And where can listeners get in touch if they'd like to know more about you or what we've discussed today?
They can reach out to me on LinkedIn. I think that's the easiest way. Eric Jacobson, it will be the guy with some random sunglasses with winter in the background. And I worked at Paradox Interactive.
I'll have that in the show notes. Okay, thanks. Bye, Eric.
Bye.
Bye, everyone. Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Community Lounge. If you enjoyed this episode, please spread the word and share it with friends and colleagues who you think would also enjoy it. You can find all the episodes on your favorite podcasting platform or at featureupvote.com/thecommunitylounge.